believe in Jesus, but it's demonstrated in their character. But then also doctrinal beliefs, that we believe the same thing. And not just somebody, again, who says they're saved, but somebody who is saved and who lives it. And then somebody who believes like we do. And those two things are very important criteria when you're looking for somebody to get married to. And that's the example that is given to us by Rebecca and Isaac as they teach Jacob. So he receives this counsel well. He receives it well. And you would do well, young person, to receive that counsel well. Spiritual reasoning and doctrinal beliefs. Don't neglect those two things. So he goes. And in his mind, he'll just be a few days. As he's on his journey to Haran, he's stopped about halfway, I would guess. And he meets God. He meets God for the first time personally. Now, he heard about God in his family. He heard about the promises. But he'd never had an encounter with God himself. And then on the journey, in his sleep, God meets with him. And Jacob seems to, after that time, after that major transition in his life, he seems to decide, doesn't he? I want to obey God. I want to do God's will. And he's different. He's not the same kind of a man. And I think we see that, although he still makes many mistakes. There's a difference in Jacob. And he continues on his journey. And really, for the first 14 verses of our text tonight, we're setting the scene. So I want you to put your seatbelt on, please. We are going somewhere with this, but you just gotta hold on. Hold on tight. Don't fall asleep. There's a few of you with your eyes closed, even right now. Let's open them up. Open them up. Open them up. Okay. Set the scene here, okay? Jacob presents himself to Laban as a hard worker. By the way, Jacob was a hard worker. You know, and many times we see Jacob as this sort of effeminate-looking guy that has arms like this, you know, because he was a mama's boy and he didn't do anything but wash dishes and wear an apron, you know, and he liked to pick flowers. We sort of see Jacob that way. But that wasn't how he was at all. He was a hard worker and he was no slouch. We're going to see that here in just a little bit because what all of these young shepherd boys could not do, he does. It could barely do as a group, he does by himself. So I'll show you that here in just a little bit. But, you know, he was a hard worker, he was smart, and he demonstrated that to Laban, that he was a hard worker, he was smart, and that he was strong. And to Laban, you know what that was presented to Laban as? A prime candidate to be manipulated, to be abused, to be used, to be deceived, to be taken advantage of, which is what happens to Jacob. Look at verse number 1. Yeah, he sees these shepherds' boys just waiting, which I think really irritates him. Jacob went on his journey, and he came to the land of the people of the east. Now, the people of the east, we need to understand that these people are spoken of in the scripture later on in the book of Judges, chapter 6, I believe. Yes, Judges 6:3, to be ones who got together with the Amalekites and with the Midianites against Israel into battle. So we know of them later on as being a people that was hostile towards Israel. And he goes into their land. They were known as nomadic people. They were known as, as a people that had large flocks and herds of numerous cattle and camels. Okay, verse 2. He looked, and behold, a well in the field. So he sees this well. Lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. Whenever you have three flocks of sheep, that means you have shepherds that are with those flocks of sheep. And lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of the well, they, being the shepherds, watered the flock. And a great stone was upon the well's mouth. Now, I think it needs to be noted that the stone that was on the well's mouth, it wasn't a little stone. It wasn't just like a rock that just anybody could push off of the well. It was a rock that was designed to protect the well from just anyone who would come up and steal from the well or take water from the well or from the elements. It would protect the well from the elements. Verse 3, and thither there were all the flocks gathered, all the flocks. And then whenever they were all there, what did they do? They rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep, put the stone again upon the well's mouth in its place. You know why they waited for everybody to get there? I already said it a minute ago. It's because it was big. And there wasn't any one person who could get it off. And so what normally would happen, and likely is why it says it the way that it does, is the guys would try to get out as early as they can because it was get in line. And whoever's in line first, once there's enough flocks and shepherd boys there to get the rock off of the well, whoever was there first gets to water his sheep first. So it's kind of first comes, first serve. And that's the scene that's there. Now, Jacob sees them waiting, just sort of sitting. And as we saw just a minute ago, we're going to find out that I think that really bugged him. But he sees them and he wants to know if they know Laban or if they know of him. And so he asks them, do you know Laban? They said, oh, well, yeah, we know him. And that's his daughter, Rachel. She's on her way. Verse 4. Jacob said unto them, my brethren. Now, my brethren doesn't mean that he was related to them. It was cordial. It was a kindness. He was just greeting them with a friendly greeting, okay? It would be sort of like when you come to church and you would say, hi, how are you doing today? My name is so-and-so. It was just being friendly. Whence be ye? He asked them. And they said, of Haran we are, or are we? And he said unto them, because he's excited. He finds out they're from exactly where he is going to find Laban, who is in Haran. And so he said, it could just spew out of his mouth before he can hold it. Know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? I mean, he's excited to get that question out. I'm looking for a guy named Laban. Do you know him? Now, the response is quite interesting. Because it really shows us a picture of how they really felt about Laban. You can almost feel the attitude whenever they answered him. Laban. Yeah, we know him. Can you feel it? Laban. Do you know Laban? There's a guy named Laban, and I think he's from Haran. Do you know him? Oh, yeah, Laban. We know him. That's all they said. Okay. I don't know. I just thought that was really good. Verse 6. And he said unto them, is he well? And they said, yeah, he's well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, she comes with the sheep. You know what? We really don't want to talk to you about Laban. His daughter's on the way. Why don't you talk to her about him? Because that's his daughter. So doesn't that give us, although he's so friendly to them, whenever Laban's name comes up, doesn't that shed light really on the testimony that Laban has, even with the community? He was already known really as a with these guys, as a guy that, with their sarcasm, gives us a glimpse into his real character, which we do find out later wasn't good. Now, it is interesting, too, and I think it should be noted, as we're still laying the foundation here tonight, that Rebecca, being a woman, is unusual for her to tend the sheep. That's very unusual. And so all by itself, we're wondering, why is Rachel, I don't know if I said Rebecca right there, I meant Rachel, why is Rachel coming with the sheep? That's very unusual. And so it could be any of a few things. First, it could be, well, Laban did have sons, we find out later, but they might have been too young. It might have been that Laban had a host of herds and sheep, that all of his kids were dispersed, and he needed all of his kids to do the sheep. Or the third thing could be that Rachel was a worker too. She just said, hey, Dad, I want to do the sheep. And he said, okay, you can do it. But here she comes on the journey. And so as he made a conversation with these shepherd boys, he hears of Rachel coming. Now, here's something we do know. He knows that she's coming. Maybe he sees her a ways off, but she's not there yet, and maybe she's walked slow. But during her journey to the well, Jacob has some more questions for these shepherd boys. You know what his questions have to do with? Why are you guys just sitting here? Okay, and as I said a little bit ago, I think it bugged him because he's a worker. Why are you just sitting around? You should be moving the well off, or rather the rock off the wall of this well. In high day, you should give your sheep drink and let them get out in the field and graze. Look at verse 7. He said, lo, it is yet high day. Neither is it time for the cattle, that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep and go and feed them. Let them graze. Why are you just sitting here, he says, verse 8. And they said, we cannot, until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. So here's basically what they said in response to Jacob. And by the way, doesn't this tell us a little bit about the character of Jacob? That he really is a worker. And it might be that something's changed in him since he met God in our last chapter. But as he confronts these shepherd boys, he asks them, "Why are you just sitting here?" And here's basically what they said. "Well, you know, we're just waiting for everybody to get together so we can move the stone off of the well. And that's been our routine. And so we don't want to break the routine, you know. We don't want to mess with the routine." And so, you know, that really answers his question about why they're just sitting there. Jacob presents himself now to Rachel as she arrives. And it's kind of an unusual presentation of yourself whenever you see your, you know, somebody for the first time, you run up to him and kiss him. But anyway, that's what he did. Look at verse 9. "While he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth." I think we should pause there, don't you? The stone that the other guys couldn't, for some reason, roll from the mouth of the well, Jacob all by himself did. I don't know. This tells me a couple things, or one of two things, or maybe both. First, those shepherd boys are lazy. Lazy bums. Or, number two, Jacob must have, you know, he must be got some rock arms, you know what I'm talking about? Ran up to this stone, pushed it off there all by himself. Okay. Let's see, where were we at right there? Well's mouth, verse 10. "He watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother." Verse 11. Jacob kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice and wept. Very unusual series of events. Let me run over to the rock, push it off, run over to you, kiss you, and then cry. Okay. He's an emotional wreck, I think. And he wept. I wonder if it was in that order, or maybe. Anyway, I'm like, okay. Verse 12. "Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother, and he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father." See, maybe he should have said that first before he laid one on her. I don't know. But anyway, once she was, you know, got over the shock, he explained to her, "I am related to you, and I'm just excited, okay?" And then she ran and told her father. Verse 13. "It came to pass, when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, and embraced him, and kissed him, and brought him to his house, and he told Laban all these things. And Laban said unto him, Surely thou art my bone and my flesh. And he abode with him a space of a few months." I want to say something about him coming and embracing him. As soon as Rachel, I keep wanting to call her Rebekah, Rachel came to her father Laban and said, "Hey, Dad, there's a guy named Jacob, and it's Rebekah, your sister's son. He's come to see us." And it's been a long time since he's even heard anything about Rebekah. Remember the last time, though? Remember the last time that he met somebody who came bearing gifts with 10 camels? Because the camels were coming. Remember that? He took Rebekah away. What did Laban have? Only one thing on his mind. I don't know if you remember, but it was money. What am I going to get out of my sister? All right, let's do it. We'll take it. Sold his sister off. Took her, or rather, she went with the servant. And now Jacob's here, and he comes running. And it might be that he's excited to get another gift. It might be. And now, after later, we find out a little bit more about Laban, I think we would be accurate to assume that. But he said to him, once he finds the story, and we don't know how many of the details, verse 13, look at the last phrase. "He told Laban all these things." I wonder how many of the details he did tell Laban. I wonder if he told Laban that he put the sheep's, you know, like the goat hair on his arms. I wonder if he told him that. I wonder if he told him that he tried to change his voice while he was talking to Dad because he sounded like Jacob, remember? I'm not sure all that he told Laban. I feel that maybe he left a few details out. But Laban was convinced, "You are my family, and you can stay with me. You can stay here with us for a space." And it says he abode with him for a space of a month. Not that he was only going to stay with them for a month, but it was just the right amount of time for Laban to figure out just exactly what he was going to do with Jacob, because that was his plan. Well, he didn't have any money with him, so what can I do with this guy? It took him about a month to figure out what he was going to do. And then he got it. The light bulb came on. I know what I'm going to do. And today, tonight, we're going to see Laban take advantage of Jacob. And it's a sad story. It really is. Jacob loved Rachel. We're going to see that in our story tonight. He loved her. And because Laban saw that Jacob loved his daughter, Laban took advantage of Jacob's love by making him a bond slave for 14 years. Two characteristics that define us when we are setting the stage of taking advantage of other people. Two things. Number one, if you're going to take advantage of somebody, here's two things you're going to do. And I think if you'll mark these things, you'll see them in your life at times. Sad to say, but it's true. Number one, manipulation. Manipulation. The word manipulation means to skillfully twist a thing to your own control. It means control. It means to control something. But the idea is to twist something to make it to your advantage or to your control. That's what it means to manipulate something. To make you look better, right? Or to make you out better. Or to give you something that you didn't have before. To manipulate. Laban manipulated Jacob. And he manipulated him into choosing his own wage. You say, wait a second. I thought that was a good thing for Laban to ask Jacob to choose his own wage. I'll show you that it was manipulation here in just a minute. And it was because Jacob loved Rachel. And Laban well knew that Jacob loved Rachel. He well knew that. And so Jacob offered to work for him for 7 years to pay for her hand in marriage. And then Laban agrees. Look at verse 15. Let's follow this. We're going to see manipulation all through this, okay? Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother. I just wanted to pause there for a second. Shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wage be? Laban had two daughters, and we see in verse 16 really what he had in mind. It says that the first daughter was the elder, her name was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah was tender-eyed. Now, let me say something about that for a minute. I've done a lot of research on that. I kind of was critical of guys that preach this before and just call her dog ugly, you know. Or she, that, you know what tender eye means? It means she's dog ugly. You know, I heard guests say that. And it doesn't say dog ugly, okay? It says tender eyed. I heard most of them in the commentaries basically say it doesn't mean that she was dog ugly. It just means that Rachel was beautiful and Leah wasn't as beautiful as Rachel, okay? Tender eyed, one commentator said Rachel was beautiful, but Leah had something wrong with her eyes. You know, I thought, okay, maybe one of her eyes was going over here, you know, and the other one was looking that way. I don't know. But something was wrong with her eyes, and whether that's the case or not, I don't know. But this is the real issue in Laban's mind. As he brings up this wage thing, do you know Laban is no ignorant man? And he's a seasoned manipulator. He's a seasoned manipulator. And he's watched for a whole month that Jacob loves Rachel. So I'm going to ask him, I don't want you to work for nothing. What do you want your wage to be? And, well, really, Jacob responds exactly how Laban wanted him to. Because, let me say this before we read on. Because Laban, at this point, cares more about money than he does his own daughters. 18, Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for a house, cattle, a lot of land, you know, just a bunch of stuff, and Rachel. Nope, 7 years. Only one thing that you'll pay me, Rachel. That's the only thing I'm going to earn. Wow. Thy younger daughter, he says, verse 19, Laban said, oh, well, it's better for me to give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. It seemed unto him as a few days for the love he had for her. Laban agreed. Now, this is a dowry. The reason why he said 7 years, in the way, and it's really a customary thing, but whenever you were to get married to somebody, what you would do is you would pay a dowry. You would actually do a sort of a wedding gift to pay for, you know, your spouse or for your wife. And so basically what Jacob is saying is, I will be your slave, which is 7 years of service with no pay. That's a Hebrew definition of a bond slave, a Jewish slave. He said, I will make myself a slave for you for 7 years for your daughter Rachel's hand in marriage. And he gave himself to Laban. And of course, Laban was excited. You know why? Because this is exactly why he set this thing up. He manipulated Jacob. And this is really interesting to our story and our text, but it's also true in our life today, because we have a tendency to use manipulation to get our own way as well. I remember whenever I was a kid that I would hang out with certain friends just because of what they had. Okay, so there was a kid that I didn't really think he was that great of a friend. In fact, I didn't like him that much because he was a brat. Like, his parents pretty much gave him whatever he wanted, and he was a brat. I didn't like hanging around with him, but he had everything. So I liked to go to his house because we would play the PlayStation, which, you know, today is like a PlayStation 10. It was PlayStation 1. It just came out when I was young. So anyway, he had one of those, and it was like, whoa, he has a PlayStation. So I went over there, and we would do that, and he had a basketball court in his backyard, which was really cool. So we would play basketball. And I hung out with him just because of that. There was a girl, her house that we would, myself and some of our friends would go to her house just because we could eat food at her house. And she had a trampoline in her backyard. That's the only reason we went over there. It wasn't because we had a special friendship with her. It was, we could eat food and jump on the trampoline. So we would go over there when we got hungry. I remember I would take it at times in my young life. I'm not proud of this, some of these things that I'm telling you. But I remember times when I was young, and I would take advantage of my grandma, because my grandma would want to get things for me. You know how grandmas are. And I would take advantage of my grandma because I knew that she would, if I asked for something, she would get it for me. I remember whenever I was at the mall once with my mom, and my mom, those of you who know my mom, she's the sweetest lady. She's always been that way. And she's very gullible too, and I sort of take on some of those characteristics. But when you're gullible, you're at times easily manipulated. But anyway, my mom and I were at the mall, and see, I was a teenager and a very good manipulator, and I talked my mom into buying me some basketball shoes that were like really expensive, because I really needed those shoes, and I talked her into it. And I remember those times where I manipulated my friends. I remember times when I manipulated my family. And I know that in life, we have tendencies to use manipulation in our daily life when we take advantage of the good graces of God's people. Whenever we expect people to do things for us from a work standpoint, for no cost. You know, I've seen that in church a lot. Now, let me say something about that in two ways. And I need everybody's attention right here. If you're going to do some work for somebody in the church and volunteer your time, that's a blessing. I say, if you're able to do that, do it. But as a person who is asking for somebody to work for you, you should never expect them to do it for nothing. And I think at times we use the relationships that we have within the church body to manipulate each other, to get things out of each other. And I'm not saying that I see that in our church. I'm just saying I've made that observation. And it's not a good thing. It's manipulation to cash in on the good grace of people, or to go out with certain people. You know, go out to eat with certain people. Why? Because they'll pay for it. I don't like to I don't like them necessarily, but hey, if I go out to eat with them, then they'll pay for it, and then yeah, we're great. That's manipulation. That's a form of manipulation. And it's not good. It's not godly. Whenever, as a family, God gave me my wife, I'm blessed, believe me, I'm so blessed. It doesn't mean that because we go to church faithfully and we love God that we don't have a tendency to manipulate each other at times. You say, well, wait a second, you manipulate each other? Well, whenever we as a husband or a wife do or say certain things just because we know what it will make them feel like, or because we know what it'll make them do. There are certain things or ways that we can act as a spouse that will, and we know this is true, that will make our spouse do something for us. So I'm going to act mad. I'm going to act like I'm mad right now for a couple hours. Because then if I act mad for a while, then she'll wonder, what's wrong, you know? And then I'll get something that I wanted, whatever it was that I was wanting. And so manipulation can be used even inside of a marriage. When even, listen, getting mad about something that we have nothing to be mad about. And that's manipulation. And so manipulation can be a part of who we are even in our life. Now I want you to see number two. Number one was manipulation. Number two that Laban used was deception. Now deception is misleading. It simply means to mislead. Jacob asked for his wife. He served for 7 years. By the way, that's a hefty price, 7 years of labor. And Laban, he says, hey, it's 7 years is up. Give me my wife. Laban gave him Leah instead of Rachel. Why? You know what he said? Well, it's because the custom demands it. The custom demands it. You lied to me. I mean, this is flat out deception. Look at verse 21. Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, and that I may go in unto her. Laban gathered together all the men of the place, made a feast. Got the party together, right? The marriage party, ceremony. Came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. Now you're asking the same question that I was asking when I studied this. How does that happen? How do you get married to somebody and not know who it is? I mean, come on. And it has to do with the ceremony. Whenever they would get the families together, it would be his family. It would be her family. That's still tradition we have today. And the ceremony, though, wasn't just one ceremony that lasted, if it's a good one, less than an hour. You know what I mean? I'm kidding. Anyway, this ceremony went on for a whole week. And the way that it happened in the beginning on the first day is the bride-to-be had a really heavy veil on, and she was wrapped in a cloak. Before she would go in unto him, as it says in the text, she would be wrapped heavily in a cloak. And because Jacob's family is not there, there's nobody to really, you know, double check that the right woman's under the cloak. I mean, you know, we would sort of expect that it was the right lady. But there was nobody on his side of the family to, you know, sort of counterbalance this thing. Gave Laban the perfect opportunity to, you know, display his deceit. And with the veil and with the cloak and the family, really, as you can tell, behind this thing, he slipped Leah into the chamber where they would meet together. Consummate the marriage. It says in verse number 23 that he took Leah, his daughter, brought her into him, and he went into her. Verse 24, Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid for an handmaid. We'll find out more about Zilpah in time to come. But the reason why he gave her Zilpah is because it was also a wedding gift. And it was a pretty hefty price to give a servant girl to his daughter. And so he made this, he gave this gift to her. And verse 25, it came to pass, and in the morning, behold, it was Leah. He said to Laban, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore hast thou beguiled me? I can't even comprehend. I cannot even comprehend what he is thinking and feeling right this time. Verse 26, Laban said, well, here's the reason why I did it. It must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. That's not good enough, Laban. That is not good enough. You lied to me all along the way. You could have told me in the beginning that this was your custom, but you never told me this. It was deceit. Deceit. Yeah. Laban asked Jacob to take Leah as his wife. Now watch really what his plan was. All along, go ahead and take her to be your wife. I'll give you Rachel too, if you'll serve me for 7 more years. What's Jacob going to do? What's he going to do? I mean, he is stuck. Laban's got him. Oh, you want Rachel? I knew you wanted her all along. I'll give her to you if you'll be my bondslave for 7 more years. Okay. That's what he said. Fulfill servants. 27, thou shalt serve me for yet 7 other years. 28, Jacob did so. Fulfilled her week. And he gave Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. He didn't have to wait this time. Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, handmaid, to be her maid. And he went into Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and served him yet 7 other years. And don't we, right at the start of this family, see the dysfunction that's going to follow in this family? You'll not, from the beginning of Jacob's family life to the end of Jacob's family life, you'll never find a normal, happy, good situation. Never. It was one terrible thing after another. And Laban deceived him, took advantage of him because of deception. And we still have a tendency to do this today. We do. I remember I told you earlier that I hung out with kids just because of what they had. I also stole from people when I was a kid. I'm not proud of this. I'm telling you my testimony, though. I was a thief. If I hung out with a friend, I was always on the lookout for something I could take from them without getting caught. I remember whenever my cousin took me with him, I was in 7th grade at the height of my thievery. And we went out to the woods there in Oklahoma. We camped out for a week. And I went, you know, I was trying to find something out of his stuff and his friend. It was him, his friend, and myself. And I was going through their bags while they were over at the creek, looking through their stuff, trying to find something I could steal. And I found a pair of jean shorts that I wanted. And so I grabbed them. And I didn't know how I could put them in my bag without getting caught. And there was a flap at the bottom of my bag that sort of came up. And I put them on the bottom, and then I put that flap over them, and then I put all my stuff back on top. And later I found out, well, that was a good idea because the shorts were missing, and my cousin was like, where are the shorts at? And he went through my bag, and he never saw them because they were under that flap. You know, what a shame. And I was a thief, deceive, deceptive, manipulation, take advantage of people. I do want to say that I did make that right with my family later when I got my heart right with God. I did. I tried to get people to steal things for me. I would try to get my brother and other kids to go into the gas station and steal candy, and then we would share it. It was a game. Looking for the next person I could take advantage of. That's what I was. Deception is to take advantage of your situation so that whenever you're at work and you take things from the supply room or tools or things that don't belong to you, and because it's a big company, they can afford it, right? Or you're in the company truck and you do burnouts because it's the company truck, right? Or the company car. Or deception is to take advantage of your parents, saying to them whatever they want to hear so you can get what you want. My mom, I told you about her. What a sweet lady. She's always been that way. And I tell you what, I'm ashamed of the things that I would say to my mom to get something out of her. The lies that I would tell. And in my heart, it wasn't true. I was playing her. Deception. We're sinful humans. We are. And we tend to take advantage of people by manipulating them and by deceiving them. We have that tendency. And today, I'm not pointing finger or making jabs or trying to create something in you that's not there. I'm just saying that we have a tendency to do this. Now, I want to show you the irony of this story because it's going to bring it all together. You ready for this? Go to Genesis 25. Look at verse 29. Jacob. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Aren't we talking about Jacob who's being manipulated? Right? Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came in from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, that red stuff in the pot smells pretty good. Feed me with that. I'm faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point to die. What profit shall this birthright do to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." And he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage and lentils. Do you know what Jacob just did? He manipulated his brother. He manipulated him. Took away the birthright. Go to chapter 27. Look at verse 21. And Isaac said unto Jacob, "Come near, I pray thee." Remember, he has the goat hair on his arm and neck. Yeah. "Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not." And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father and felt him. And he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." Which is really, again, funny. I can't get over that. Esau felt like a goat. Anyway, verse 23. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, and his brother as his brother Esau's hand. So he blessed him. And he said, now watch verse 24. "Art thou my very son Esau?" And he said, what? "I am." You know what that is? That's deception. So Jacob manipulated his family, and Jacob deceived his family. And now, in chapter 29, Jacob is being manipulated, and Jacob is being deceived. And that gives us a glimpse into our own lives so that we can know what's going to happen to us if we decide that we're going to take advantage of people. That you will not escape the consequences of taking advantage of people. If you manipulate people, you can find, and in your life, you will be manipulated. If you deceive people, you deceive your mom, you deceive your dad, you deceive your spouse, you deceive your boss, you deceive your coworkers, you deceive your pastor, you deceive your friends, you deceive. You will find that you will be deceived. It's going to happen. You will not escape it. It will come back to you. When I was in Oklahoma, I surrendered to be a pastor, was in Bible college, and I lived in a trailer house that my wife is so proud of. We almost lived there anyway. I thought it was great, but anyway, the big hole in the ground she thought wasn't a good idea anyway. Trailer house, you know, for a bachelor, free, no rent, you know, I thought it was great, you know. I would constantly have kids over to my house too, because I was the junior church worker, worked with the teens some, but mostly with all of junior church. I was in charge of all the kids' programs, and I loved it. I loved working with the kids. I did it for years. And I would constantly have boys over to my house to spend the night, you know, a group of boys. And I'll never forget a kid named James had the stinkiest, I mean to tell you, the stinkiest feet I have ever in my whole life. And I mean to tell you, I am totally serious. Whenever I had a group of about four or five guys over to my house once, and James was one of those guys sleeping on the couch in the living room, I came out of my room to get a drink of water, and I was like, oh, I thought I was going to vomit right there. I couldn't even go into the living room. I stopped, and I said, I'm not that thirsty. I went back to my room and closed the door. I couldn't go in there. That's how bad it stunk. I'm totally serious. The next day, whenever all the kids left, I had to burn the couch that James slept on. That's how bad it was. I took the couch out of my house and burned it. So it was a bad deal. It wasn't too long later, after having guys over to my house, that I went into my room, and I had a cup that I kept a lot of quarters in. And one time I went in there, all the quarters were gone. All of them. But not just the quarters. When I was in high school, I loved basketball. I was good at basketball, and I was devoted to basketball. And I won a free throw contest against a guy that was a really good basketball player too. And we went into four overtimes, tying on the free throw line. And I beat him on the fourth round of tying 9 out of 10 free throws, 9 out of 10 makes. And then I made 9 out of 10 again. And he only made 8. So I won. And I won a beautiful fossil watch that I was really proud of, like a $100 watch. But when I was a junior in high school, it was like, wow, this is the coolest thing ever. And I really cherished it because, not only because it was a fossil watch that was beautiful, because the memory behind it, beating that kid in the free throw contest, and I remember all of it. And I went into my room and my watch was gone. And some other things that were precious to me, they were gone. And you know the first thing that went to my mind? The very first thing that came to my mind. Those rotten, stinky kids. No, that wasn't it at all. It wasn't, really. It wasn't. It was, yeah. That's exactly what I did. That was my thought. That is exactly what I did. And it came back to me. I remember. I just want you to know that if you manipulate people and you deceive people in order to take advantage of them, no matter how it is and however it's identified in our life, you'll never escape it. It will come back to you. It will come back to you. So this evening, I think that the message is for us that we would remember that we should be honest and not take advantage of people. Never. No matter who it is, no matter what we think we want, no matter how bad we think we want it, that we would be honest. For Jacob's sake, I wish Laban would have been honest with him. But at the same time, we can understand why it happened, can't we? Yeah. Father, tonight we do pray that you will help us in this area of honesty. The area of manipulation, Lord, and deception. Taking advantage, Lord, of our situation. Lord, it's obvious so often that we are not willing to recognize, Lord, where our great need is, or where we make or where we fall short of your glory. And so tonight I pray for each one here. I'm certainly not pointing fingers. I'm just simply saying it might be tonight that somebody, you've spoken to them about an area of their life, and I pray, God, that you'd help them to repent, determine to be honest in their dealings, and trust you for the results. Please help us tonight. It's in your precious and holy name we pray and ask. Amen.